Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. You work hard for your business. So should your bank. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC.
Go to 1043thefan.com and subscribe to The Fan Daily for the latest columns, blogs, news, videos, and more sent directly to your inbox every weekday morning.
I am doing question mark millennial Ben. Okay, here we go. This is presented by Breaks Plus. Are you guys talking about Drew Lock here or Jay Cutler? Listen to yourself. Fearless, strong arm, knows he can make the throw. You guys couldn't stand Cutler, but now you love Lock? Let's see a few more games, please. That's from Tyler.
Listen, I totally agree with this. And you know what? I had a buddy of mine tell me yesterday, I haven't been this excited about a quarterback's potential since Jay Cutler. Now, there's a big difference because Jay Cutler is smart. Jay Cutler is athletic. Jay Cutler has a hose. You know, the difference is
and a Todd Heine.
Yeah, and a Todd Heine. And a reality show.
Mm-hmm.
But come on now. At any point watching Jay Cutler, did you ever think, boy, Jay Cutler loves football? Jay Cutler just happened to be blessed to play. But did you ever feel like he really loved it?
Here's the thing about Jay Cutler. I said it from day one. Okay? The old Bull Durham movie. He was Nuke LaLoosh. $1 million arm. In this case, not a 10-cent head, but like a 10-cent
attitude.
Jay Cutler should have gone down as one of the all-time greats.
Yeah.
If you are checking off the boxes for everything you want in a quarterback, he had it all. Arm, size.
Mobility.
Durability.
Intelligence. He's a smart guy.
Everything. But he didn't burn to be great.
Correct.
And he did not exude the type of personality that you want, you know, from your leader, from the face of your franchise.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, trust me when I tell you this. I see a lot of Lock.
A lot of Cutler.
I see a lot of Cutler in Lock.
Right.
And you know what? That's a compliment.
Yeah.
That is a compliment. So if that's where we're starting from, mm-hmm. that we see a lot of Cutler characteristics in Lock, that's a good thing. Now, let's add to that the right attitude. The right kind of leadership and emotional,
right.
You know,
right.
What does he discharge there? And also, and here's the other thing about Cutler, and I have seen it with Locke through the first two games. I thought Cutler too often just relied on his arm and had very lazy mechanics, and I think it hurt him at times. And there is no denying that Locke right now has some tendencies that are very Cutler-esque, throwing off his back foot, relying on his arm. That's okay right now. You're two games in. But, you know, as we move forward, yeah. I hope that he's able to refine some of that stuff.
I will tell you, the whole throwing off your back foot thing is so, it's such a cliche, and it is so overused. Like, there are times where you have to change your platform, where you have to throw off your back foot, where you have to do those things, where you can't step into the throw. You still have to be accurate. You've got to make those throws, right? The deal for me is, and this is one of the things that has hurt a lot of players coming out of college. When you're always in shotgun 100% of the time, it creates lazy mechanics. Lazy mechanics. And here's one of the things that Rich Scangarello has done a really good job with because of his time in Atlanta. They developed, and this was a Matt Ryan thing, they developed the footwork timing of all your throws out of shotgun because you have a propensity to just be lazy back there because you don't have to take a drop. So what people have to understand is all your drops, every drop you take in pro football, correlates to the route combination. So it's a timing thing. The level of depth you get on a three step, you know, versus a five step, it's 1-2 big 3-4-5, you know, like that. And that all has to do with the route combination that you're throwing so that when you hit your spot, theoretically, you should be locked and loaded and the ball's out and you're hitting a receiver in stride coming out of a break. So that's how it's all timed up. When you get in a shotgun, a lot of times your feet just get lazy. This is something I talked a long time, to Matthew Stafford about. And he said he has really gone to working on his shotgun mechanics because he's always had such a big arm that his footwork has just been bad in the shotgun because you're allowed to let it be bad. And so that's something that, you know, they will work on. But you've got, again, you want to talk about the right developer? This is something that Rich has done a really good job with other quarterbacks and something that he completely believes in, something I had a conversation with him about, this exact thing. So I think you've got the right people in place to continue to develop a Drew Lock who spent his whole career, let's face it, at Missouri, you know, throwing out of the shotgun and relying on just arm talent.
Yeah, okay, and look, there's sometimes the throwing off the back foot, leaning back, you know, it's not that big of a deal. But there was one play where he not only threw off his back foot, way before he had to, he dropped his arm down. It was that quick little jump off to the right. I can't remember who he missed badly, if it was Freeman or somebody, but it was Gannon right away jumped on him and goes, that right there needs to be fixed.
Right,
what we're talking about, the bad mechanics, okay?
Well, so here's what I'm saying. The throwing off your back foot, the reason it becomes cliche is sometimes you're forced to. Sometimes you're under pressure, you're under duress. Now, this is the thing I was talking to Matthew Stafford about. He's like, when the pocket is clean, I've got to have good mechanics. I've got to have my feet underneath me. I've got to drive off my back foot. I have got to, you know, point my hip to the target. That's a different story. Under duress, when you have to throw quickly, you've got to find a way to be off platform, whether that's off your back foot or whether that's opening up your hip, whether that's throwing sidearm. You got to be accurate. Like watch Aaron Rodgers. I've never seen a more accurate off platform thrower than Aaron Rodgers. Like, everybody thinks Aaron Rodgers is just like, you know, mechanical. No. Watch him. Go back. Take any film and watch how many different platforms he throws it from. It's remarkable. And he's on target all the time.
Well, and Showtime's like that, too.
Yeah.
Mahomes is like that,
absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely. So you've got to have that in your repertoire.
Wow. Ben.
Showtime!
Jeez, I was wondering there. Jesus, come
on.
We got a Jackson 5! Chiefs week! Let's go!
Jackson 5 can do that too. Did you see that throw he had in the end zone to his tight end when he took off to scramble and he just kind of did a little floop-de-doo?
Remember, for it to be a forward pass, it's got to go forward!
It was a floop-de-doo.
Hey, I have no problem with Drew Lock being a multi-platform thrower.
Yes!
But those times where he has the time to set the feet, step into it.
In those scenarios, in those situations, you have to be willing to use proper mechanics. And Rich Gannon is 100% right. Like, when you've got the time, you know, to step into a throw, it's funny because I was saying this about Philip Rivers watching a bunch of film on him. And one of the issues that Philip has had is being an old quarterback. So young quarterbacks oftentimes are late with the football because they're not quite sure what they're seeing. So they're late, and late throws get picked off in the NFL. You can get away with it in college. You can't get away with it in the NFL. Old quarterbacks are oftentimes early with the football. You know why? Because they don't want to get hit, right? And there are so many times I'm watching errant throws with him just because he's like, He's got 4 yards with a guy coming at him. He's like, oh, let me get rid of this real quick. I'm just not gonna get hit. And so there's a fine balance there, but everybody has work to do. But I believe that, you know, one of Rich's strength, which is Scangarello's strength, has been developing quarterbacks. Like, they talk about him in San Francisco, what he did with Nick Mullins last year in the development of Nick Mullins, and why Nick Mullins is number 2 quarterback in San Francisco has a lot to do with Rich Scangarello. So, again, growing into the play-calling aspect of it, but a lot of that is because you got so much better execution last week. The offense looked like a different offense. I am telling you, man, I watched the coaches' tape. Yeah, there's a little bit more.
Okay, so you're telling me. Okay, this goes back to something we talked about right at the beginning of the show, because you want an apology from Broncos fans.
Yeah.
You're telling me that what we saw on Sunday was no different than any other game plan that's been devised by Wrinkles all season long. It's just that this time they executed it better?
I am telling you that the depth of what they called was enhanced because of the fact that they executed better. And it allowed you to continue to call the plays. Like, you know how hard it is to continue to call a play when you whiff on a block and you know you've set it up well and you know you've shifted and you've motioned and it's set up and it's exactly what you want and you've got somebody who's going to come wide open and your quarterback's taking a mouthful and he's got to scramble out or got to take a sack. How can you come back to that play, Mike? How hard that is? So what I'm telling you is there's a bunch of day one installation things that they ran. Now, have they gotten into a lot more 3 tights and 2 tights lately to protect themselves? Yeah, that's good coaching. That's understanding what your weaknesses are. But I'm telling you now, and there's also a little bit more RPO stuff because of the athleticism of your quarterback. But yeah, they've executed better, and therefore, you know what you're calling. I mean, it's still I could take you through a bunch of weeks of this offense. They're running the same stuff.
I'm not going to argue you when it comes to, you know, looking at the coach's tape and breaking down the film. You know more than me and 99.9% of the people out there listening to this, okay?
Yeah.
I'm not going to give you the full 100 because, you know, Stokely probably knows more.
Ooh. My best friend Peyton Manning.
Ooh, snap. Let me just say this. The further you get away from the football, the less you actually know about what's going on.
Oh, okay.
That's just fact.
And it's the fact that we have so many offensive linemen on this station.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness. But, okay, here I am as the football fan.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I have a hard time buying that. I have a hard time buying that all this was just better execution. I saw an offense. I go back to what Joel Klatt talked about earlier this season, is that what you want from your offensive coordinator is a sense that the defense is chasing him, that
right.
The defense is constantly trying to catch up to him. And all season long, I've seen Scangarello, you know, chasing what the defense is doing, not the other way around. For the first time, I saw a defense that was constantly chasing what the Broncos were doing offensively. They were constantly caught off guard. They were constantly trying to figure out what's coming next, and they didn't seem to have an answer for it. And, you know, this isn't a case of, well, hey, Houston didn't have any film really on Drew Locke, so that's why they were caught ill-prepared. Romeo Crennel, their defensive coordinator with the Texans, 12-1 against rookie quarterbacks before Sunday. So it's not like he and the Texans have struggled against quarterbacks that they haven't seen much of before.
Mm-hmm.
They've dominated.
Right.
But they were clueless on Sunday, and when you take Crennel's track record and then you look at that level of ineptness and cluelessness by the Houston defense, they were that clueless and that inept against a Broncos offense that we've watched all year struggle. It had to be different. There had to be something different going on with not only the play calling, but also the attitude. The attitude of, hey, you know, we're going to throw the ball on first down.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to come out right after the Texans score to make it 38-10. And no, we're not going to run the ball two straight times up the middle of the, up into the pack because we want to try to work the clock and we want to be conservative and we don't want our young quarterback to make any mistakes, to let Houston get further into the game. No, they threw the ball on first and 10 on the first play right after Houston scored. Two plays later, they ran a flea flicker.
Right.
I mean, that, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, you can talk all you want, Mark, but come on. It was different. You have to acknowledge that.
Okay.
It was different.
Sure. Why was it different, Mike? Did they run, were they different plays? So you're telling me they're all different plays. No, they're not different plays.
Then explain to me how these same plays that they supposedly have been running all year that got them nowhere, all of a sudden on Sunday, guys are running wide open, middle of the field's
okay.
Wide open.
Right. So
here comes Freeman, wide open to walk into the. I can't remember the last time the Broncos had a walk-in touchdown like that. And they had two of them, by the way. Two of them with Hyerman, too.
You are too smart, Mike. You are too smart.
Ben? Did you get that?
All of a sudden, keep going, Ben. Don't slice this up. You are too smart to all of a sudden be Bronco Country fanboy.
I'm not being a fanboy. I'm looking at what I saw.
Okay, so.
It was markedly different.
Okay. So they win a game. What did they win the week before? 23-20 or whatever it was? So they win a game where everybody says Rich Scangarello is too conservative, that he has to be fired.
Right.
So then they came in Wednesday and say, hey guys, what we've been running this whole season, scrap pile it. We're putting in an entirely new offense on Wednesday. We're going to do everything.
Not an entirely new offense, but I do think they went a little deeper into the playbook. And I think the mentality changed. I think he felt the pressure of knowing that he's coaching for his job, that everybody wanted to see more, I don't know, bravado, swagger.
Do you know?
Let's take the fight to them type mentality.
You are too smart, Mike. If you sit there and tell me that, yeah, they started throwing it on first down and, okay, great. Is that a shift in mentality or a shift in believability of your quarterback? Okay, great. Did they completely change the playbook? That's ludicrous. No way they changed the playbook. They're running the same stuff. But here's the deal. If you wouldn't have had success early, you know what you'd have done after the Houston Texans scored? You'd have ran it three straight times and tried to eat up clock and punt and rely on your defense to make a play for you. That's what you would have done. But because you're executing and the plays and everything that you've done has worked, I mean, I still saw people say, yeah, they scored 31 in the first half, but they went to the shell in the second half. They only scored, you know, a touchdown. I mean, did you not see that? Did you not hear people crying about that?
Mm-hmm.
So, All I am telling you is their execution was great. Here's the other thing that I'll tell you. If a defense says this is what we're doing, we're basically, like, when you look at what they did, they played a lot of underneath man stuff that looked straight man, and they double teamed Cortland Sutton on a consistent basis. Just a consistent basis. And they basically said Cortland Sutton's not making a big play over the top like he did against the Chargers. He's not going to do that. And you know what our quarterback did? Took what they gave him. And they got so many times where they got a wide open, you know, running back in the flat, or they got a tight end that didn't get covered down the middle. You know, there are so many times where they busted a coverage. They didn't get something done in man. And our quarterback and our players took advantage of it. But it's not like they put in a new playbook to do that. It's they executed. The Texans didn't. You know, the big play down the middle of the field to Noah Fant, where they line up with their two tight ends and they line up with their tailback and they got two wide receivers and they play just this quarters coverage shell. All right. Somebody's got to take the tight end. Running back goes to the flat. The linebacker runs out there with him, man under. Tight end, opposite tight end goes in the flat. The linebacker runs out there with him. Both safeties went bank over the top. One to Tim Patrick. One went hard over the top to Cortland Sutton on the other side. And there's nobody there with the tight end. So either they're supposed to cloud that corner down. Safety goes over the top and takes that receiver, and you've got somebody in the flat, and that linebacker is man-to-man on the tight end, or that safety on Tim Patrick's side is supposed to come down and take the tight end man-to-man, and that corner is supposed to play over the top of that receiver. So they had a call. They busted it, right? And the tight end isn't covered. 27-yard gain later. Like, is that a brand new play? No, it's just a wide check delay. I mean, it's.
I'm not arguing with you that.
It's a day one.
I'm not arguing with you that they somehow, you know, rewrote the playbook before the Texans game. As you are fond of saying, everybody's running the same plays.
Right.
Okay. But I don't know why you can't agree with me that the mentality
changed. I will agree with you that the mentality
and
changed.
Absolutely. And that's Scangarello feeling the heat. That's Scangarello knowing that if he wants to hold on to his job, he has to have a more aggressive mindset. There was a line from Gannon during the game.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and it was right, I think it was right after they flashed the stat about Crennel being 12-1 against rookie quarterbacks, Gannon said, I think Crennel has been caught off guard by how aggressive the Broncos have been throwing on early downs. The plays they threw on,
sure,
you're right, they've been in the playbook since day one.
Right.
But it's the willingness and the idea of using those plays in that situation, mm-hmm, that has been so un-Bronco-like, un-Scangarello-like all season long.
That's too smart, Mike.
That's where the change.
Which is fine. So I will give you that. Do you maintain that aggressive mentality if you don't execute? If your guys don't block guys, your quarterback gets hit, like, can you maintain that? And the answer is no. But because you execute in a lot of it, hey man, I'm telling you, you know, this is something that we've talked a lot about. Your inability to control line of scrimmage. A lot of that goes to the right side of the line of scrimmage. Schlotsky's Schlottman. Yeah, Schlotsky's
Every time you say Schlotsky's, I get a little hungrier.
Yeah, he went with, that thing had, that
pastrami
was
on rye.
Pastrami, it had like pepperoni, turkey, maybe put some roast beef in there. I mean, it had everything. Anyhow. He played with some great, he solidified that, and Juwan James played well. Like, Juwan James helped them out from an execution standpoint, from an aggressiveness standpoint, which gives your play caller confidence to continue to push the ball, continue to be aggressive. But you can't be aggressive. You know, at some point you gotta manage the issues. And if you go aggressive and you turn the ball over, you get hit in the backfield, you get hit in the teeth, eventually you're just going to be conservative the whole time and go, we got a pretty good defense, let's rely on it. So, yeah, was it a little bit different mindset? You're damn right it was, but it maintained to be a different mindset because you were executing.
So
you could do that.
Did he save his job? And he talked. Now,
ridiculous that he was on the hot seat.
Even when we were discussing the idea, you said, 80% I believe he's back.
Mm-hmm.
So is that now 100%?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
All right.
We're back. We got taller on Monday.
As a team, we're getting tall.
I felt that offense was taller on Sunday.
It was taller.
It just felt taller.
You just walked out there and you ran, man, is something different?
They look taller. They look just
more. Orleans. Tall.
Yeah, more swagger. You know, when you got that swagger, you know, it's like when we watch Reisner walk around at UCL Training Center. He's just, mm-hmm, you know, he's a little bit more upright. You know, a lot of you offensive linemen walk over, hunched over, slouch. He just, you know, straight up.
Yeah, like the way that Dalton Reisner walks.
Shoulders thrown back.
Right.
Tall. Now that they have their quarterback, does it change what they need to do when it comes to the draft? That's next.
Oh. You work hard for your business. So should we. That's why First Bank offers commercial real estate loans, business lines of credit, and online cash management solutions. With tools and services designed to make your business run easier, your day could have less this and more this. Visit eFirstBank.com/business to learn more. First Bank, business banking for good. Member FDIC.
First Bank, banking for good.
Here's the thing about Drew Lock's first two games. And I think there's been a bit of a premature rush to crown him. Believe me, I am highly vested in him being the guy.
You are.
Oh, to because, be able to sit back for the next decade and say, see, I told you, another second round quarterback.
Could we, like,
khaki pants strikes again.
You know how Jim Harbaugh does the khaki commercials.
Yeah.
Like, well, I don't know.
That's where the whole khaki pants theory came from.
I realize that, but could we get Drew Lock a khaki pants endorsement?
I would love to.
That would be great.
I would love to take a picture with him with us both rocking khakis.
You could cordially invite him.
I could.
Come to your khaki pants photo shoot.
Sure. Sure. Why not?
Would you have a khaki pants photo shoot?
Of course. Why not? Are you kidding me? Hey, and this is the point. This is the point I've been making is, and this is the heart of the khaki pants argument, is the idea that the only way you can find franchise quarterbacks is if you take them in the first round, especially in the top, you know, five, that you have to take them there in order to increase the odds. That's just a fallacy. Okay, it's just a fallacy.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back and look at the last 10 years, quarterbacks that have been drafted in the last 10 years, it coincides with the remarkable sweeping evolution of the college game and how that has filtered down into the NFL. It changes the depth of the pool of quarterbacks that are out there. And I would challenge anybody, including my man D-Mac, you take Drew Lock and just what you're watching, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The arm, the mobility, all that stuff. And all of it, if you just put him in out there on a stage and you did not know where these guys are drafted and you put Locke out there with Mayfield and Sam Darnold and Josh Allen and Carson Wentz and Jared Goff, what would your eyes tell you? You would not be able to tell who was taken in the first.
Sure.
Who was taken in the second? There's no way.
As a matter of fact,
there's no way.
If you put them side by side, just last weekend alone,
yeah,
you would say, oh, no question, Drew Lock is, you know, destined to be the one.
Yeah, I think just if your eye test would say you'd think Lock was drafted ahead of Goff, ahead of Darnold.
Mm-hmm.
Probably had a Mayfield.
Oh, certainly. Mayfield's one of the top. He's like two or three as far as interceptions are concerned on the season.
But just also size and you know, just the eye test. And
yeah.
that's the point here. It's just the eye test tells you. And then you look and see the way he's playing, and it's just another reminder. There are more quarterbacks that can play in this league out there than ever before. And you don't have to take them that early. Now, okay, we hope that Locke's the guy. I don't know if he's the guy. I hope he's the guy. I don't know if he's the guy. I'm certainly not going to be so presumptuous. If he had two horrible games, I would not bury the kid and say, nope,
told you.
Can't play.
Yeah.
So just because he's had two good games, I'm not going to say, yep, clearly he's the guy for the next 10 years.
Right.
I am not going to fall into the same trap that you fell into with Trevor Siemian.
You goaded me.
You goaded me into that.
Boom. No, I've seen it coming all day.
Your head is so big.
I have been waiting for it all day.
Boom.
And that's exactly why I'm not going to anoint him. Because I learned my lesson.
You learned your lesson.
You goat me into something that
I
should never know.
I'm shocked that you haven't come out and say, let's sign him for a 10-year contract at $300
million. Gosh, I hate you sometimes. By the way, we did a graphic on the game I was doing because of Gardner Minshew.
Yes.
The number of 24 or younger quarterbacks out there that are operating teams right now and playing well, Josh Allen in Buffalo, Sam Darnold with the Jets. Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. Baker Mayfield in Cleveland. Deshaun Watson in Houston. Minshew. You've got, obviously, Drew Lock here, Kansas City. You've got Mahomes is less than 24.
I mean, showtime!
It goes on.
I think
and
I
on.
Saw
I think
a
Dak
stat.
Prescott.
I think you guys can look this up next time. Have your crack stat crew work on this. I don't think since the Super Bowl era began, we've ever had this many, you know, under 24, under 25 quarterbacks.
There's like 15 guys starting right now.
Yes, because of the mentality out there that exists that you have to go draft your quarterback no matter what. And I would hope that, you know, the success of the Cousins, the Wilsons, mm-hmm. the Garoppolos, maybe the Locks,
right.
you know, point more and more point to teams saying, you know, hey, we don't have to do that. We can take a great football player and then get our quarterback at another time.
Right.
Now, I don't know if Locke's the guy, but here's one thing that has come out of these first two games. There's no reason for the Broncos to take a quarterback next spring. There's no reason now.
Right, because
you've seen enough to know this is the guy we want to give every opportunity to be the guy.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the free agents that were going to be available, like Phillip Rivers or Tom Brady.
Nope.
Or
nope.
You take Tom Brady's available right now. Just chiseled from granite. Gorgeous. Steely blue eyes.
Cleft chin.
Cleft chin. Available. A bargain basement price.
It's not going to be a bargain basement price.
He's always given everybody he's played for a bargain basement.
He would not giving it to the Broncos.
You would say, no, Drew Lock's our guy, Tom Brady.
Well, yeah, I'm not interested. I don't think this team is built to win a Super Bowl next year. So Brady's probably got maybe another year left.
What about
Philip
Rivers?
If I thought the Broncos were built to win big, then I would say absolutely entertain the idea of going after one of these quarterbacks. But they're not.
Okay, I'm just asking.
They're not. Yeah. By the way, if Brady's not playing in New England, he'll be in Miami next year.
You think?
Yep.
Domo Marigato.
A little birdie told me that.
Really?
Miami.
One of your Boston people?
Mm-hmm.
You got Boston people.
Yep. Miami. That's where Giselle wants to go.
Wasn't a film guy.
It was a film guy who was filming the Bengals, he told me.
Independently.
Hey,
filming.
He's independent of the football operation, yeah. though. So
what would he know? He had no idea what anybody in the organization
does.
Oh, we have a film department, huh? I had no idea.
Belichick didn't know about the film department.
Yeah, I like football season and all the things that go with it.
Who doesn't? But if you now know that you do not have to go after a quarterback next spring, what does that do? What now becomes the position that you target in the first round? I want your answer.
Okay.
And you'll give that to us coming up next.
To infinity and beyond!
Okay, while we don't know that Locke is the answer, he at least has done enough that there's no need to go out and draft a quarterback or sign a free agent veteran quarterback next spring. That's off the table now. Boy, that's got to be a huge sigh of relief for John Elway that he doesn't have to dip his toe back into that pool again. Now you can just go about adding pieces around Drew Lock, continue to strengthen this football team, which is what so many of these teams that overdraft quarterbacks in the first round should have done in the first place. But hey, that's their mistake. So now the Broncos are freed up to continue to go out and add to this football team. What becomes the position of priority for them?
You've got the first round pick, Mark Schlereth. And you've got the Denver Broncos right now positioned what? They would be picking, quick little check here, 3, 6, 9, 11, 12th. They'd be picking 12th.
Mm-hmm.
In an ideal world, you get what?
I would get whoever the best offensive lineman, specifically left tackle, is in this particular draft. But it really, I would get the best offensive line. I would go heavy into that, even if it's, hey, if you don't think there's value there, if you want to trade down again like you did. But you look at, you know, what Dalton Risner's been able to do. You look at what, you know, even in the last game, what Schlotzky's deli has done. Like, you want to prop up your khaki pants quarterback. You want to give him the best opportunity to win, the best opportunity for your play caller to have success. Have a group that can block people. Make sure that you can execute up front. Make sure that you can be multiple. Make sure that you don't have to just live in two and three tight end formations, where you can spread out of different formations, where you can continue to just beat people up with personnel groupings. And make, when you have that many personnel groupings, Mike, and you have the ability to run that many motions and that many shifts, every time you shift, your linebackers, your safeties, they all have to adjust. They all have to make calls. They all have to be able to communicate. And you do that to them enough, and there is going to be lapses like what we saw in Houston. There are going to be lapses that happen to the defense. Remember, especially on the road, Mike, when you've got the ability to shift and you've got the ability to do all that stuff, you know what's going on when you're on the road? Crowd noise. Because they're trying to disrupt the offense. And you've got all those shifts and all those motions. You know who can't communicate with the crowd noise is the defense. You don't think that affected the Texans? Of course it did. And so, like, all that stuff is important. And so, yeah, I mean, I think you continue to solidify your O-line. Your D-line needs to be solidified. You know, those things, you need players there. You need to control the lines of scrimmage. Show me teams that control the line of scrimmage. I'll show you teams that win a lot of football games. I mean, that's the Ravens. They control the line of scrimmage. They win a lot of football games.
Would you draft a center that high?
Is he the best player in football? Is he the best player on the board? Yes.
That
would be like, well, why would you draft
Quentin Nelson?
You know, well, the guy that I wanted to draft, now, well, you wouldn't have Drew Locke, and so we wouldn't even be having this conversation. But I like the center out of Texas, I think it's A&M, that McCoy, I think is his name, that the Saints got. You know, he started every play this year for the Saints, and he's been really good. Like, that's the guy, Risner and then McCoy?
Because it's interesting, I heard Tyler Palumbis yesterday saying, nope, you don't draft a center that high. You can get centers anywhere. That's not enough of an... Of all the positions on the offensive line, that is, I guess, the less impactful in terms of, you know, where you can find guys.
Well, how many guys are good there? Listen, I'm going, if you can find guys that can play, if you've got good players, if you've got a guy that is a difference maker, regardless if he's a guard, if he's a center, if he's a tackle, man, I think that's something you need to address. You need to have depth there. You need to be better. Everybody knows you need to be better there. And they were better Sunday there. I mean, there is no question.
Okay, it's interesting that you said left tackle because, in case you missed it, folks, I think the biggest development of this show was that when talking about the Broncos left tackle, Mark did not just simply refer to him as 72. He actually called him GB72. I think that's a huge step.
Yeah.
I mean, you still will not call him by his full Christian name, but you brought the initials into play for the first time in a while.
I
find that a little surprising that you stay left tackle, still a position of need.
Well, I mean,
that you would take 12th overall.
if there's a gray one, yeah, I mean, that's something that needs to be addressed. And I thought GB72 played a heck of a lot better yesterday. Could it be?
Way this is going, you two are going to be best buds pretty soon.
That Mike Munchak is making that big a difference. Could it be? I'm not, like, pump the brakes a little bit.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with adding O-line, D-line. What about corner, though? Chris Harris probably won't be here.
Chris Harris is still a really good player.
Vic Fangio talked about how, hey, we tried Kareem Jackson a little bit at corner out of necessity, but we really like him at safety. Of course, why wouldn't you? I mean, that guy was...
How good is he?
I mean, that was... What he did on Sunday, that was Ed Reed-like. That was Troy Polamalu-like. I mean, you take whatever great, great safety that you've watched over the years. I mean, that's the kind of game that Kareem Jackson had the other day.
He was phenomenal. I mean, hitting people at the line of scrimmage, run support, knocking dudes around. Johnny on the spot. How good was he yesterday? Or Sunday. I keep saying yesterday. We were off Monday. How good was he? Homecoming to Houston.
Oh, he was great. He was just
phenomenal. It was phenomenal, man. That was so much fun to watch. And good for him, too.
So O-line. Okay. So these, I think, are shaping up as the top. For me, these are the top three.
Okay.
Areas that I would love to see them upgrade. O-line, D-line, corner.
Okay.
So you would prioritize those how? 1, 2, 3. You go O-line 1? Of course you would. You're Mark Schwarth.
Yeah, of course I would.
Then?
If I go O-line 1?
Yeah.
I'm going... Probably D-line. And then corner.
Hey, I can't really argue with that. You know, you just continue to build up your trenches. If you got the quarterback, if you think you got the quarterback, at least the guy that you're going to really try to build around for the next couple of years, then mm-hmm. just improve the guts of your football team. Just do that.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong. You really can't. Hey, quick hockey note I want to bring up. The Dallas Stars have fired head coach Jim Montgomery, effective immediately. Why did I bring that up? Because Jim Montgomery, before going to Dallas, was the head coach of the DU Pioneers, won a national championship in 2017. This is a story that will be interesting to follow because despite going 16-4-2 in their last 22 games, he was fired. And as the Stars GM said, we expect all of our employees to act with integrity and exhibit professional behavior while working for and representing our organization. This decision was made due to unprofessional conduct inconsistent with the core values and beliefs of the Dallas Stars and the National Hockey League.
Uh-oh. No longer part of the organization.
Ooh. We will, follow that one.
Yes.
All right. We are done. Thank you so much. Again, thanks to Zach and Stoke for filling in for us yesterday, the Hardy Boys.
Yes.
Who brought their, as one texter said, their over-the-top, golly gee, everything is awesome deliriousness. The Hardy Boys. We'll call them the Hardy Boys.
I love that.
All right, Sandy and Orlando coming up next.
You work hard for your business. So should we. That's why First Bank offers commercial real estate loans, business lines of credit, and online cash management solutions. With tools and services designed to make your business run easier, your day could have less this and more this. Visit eFirstBank.com/business to learn more. First Bank, business banking for good. Member FDIC. First
Bank. Banking for good.